Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. In education, we often find ourselves stuck in the cycle of admiring the problem, talking in circles, sharing opinions, but not always moving towards solutions. While understanding the challenge is important, sometimes the best way to move forward is simply rolling up your sleeves and getting to work. And today we are so excited to have Dr. Kristen Panzarella with us to dive into this very idea, the power of getting to the work. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, I would love for you to introduce yourself. Tell us about your district and about your role and just kind of where you guys are at with your MTSS implementation.
I'm currently working in the Lawrence School District, which is a small district located in Nassau County on Long Island. And we have about 2,300 students ranging from the pre-K to 12 grade level. And within our district, we serve a very diverse student body and have, I would say, about 40% of our students being English language learners. And our schools are Title I. And we also serve about 85% of our students coming from economically disadvantaged backgrounds and qualify for free and reduced lunch. I've been in the Lawrence School District for about a decade now, initially starting as a middle school assistant principal. And then right around 2020, I transitioned into my current role as primary school principal, and I oversee grades 1, 2, and 3. But I also serve as our district director of special programs. And within that role is really where I get to work alongside my colleagues in K-12 to really focus on that curriculum, the instruction, professional development. And that's really where we're diving into building our MTS framework and that alignment. So we just started with Branching Minds earlier this year. So this is really our first year with really working through that alignment and really diving into those conversations about what our MTS structure looks like, how we're going to create those procedures and protocols and be consistent, and how Branching Minds is going to be our platform and our resource to really help us do that.
Yeah. And something we had talked about before is just that idea of getting into the work, right? Because I talked to a lot of people who are implementing an MTSS platform like Branching Minds, who, spend a lot of time doing a bunch of background work to prep people for implementation. But I think what was unique about our conversation was you had mentioned, you're like, we're just getting into it. Like, we're getting started, we're going. And I thought that was just kind of unique in the sense of how sometimes we're like, we learn as we go, kind of start the work because there's an urgent need for helping students. And so I'm curious about like what you have done kind of to just get this, push the engine forward really quickly. What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah. So I took on this district director role January. So with that transition, I sort of saw it as an opportunity to really change our approach. We did a lot of talking about what does MTS look like, what would tiers look like, how would our tiers be modified to meet our student population. And we were having these conversations in the faculty meetings, but we kind of left them at that. So I kind of call it this like analysis paralysis that we get like stuck in, where, you come around a table, we have a platform, we have solutions, but the solutions kind of stay at the conference table. They kind of just stay with endless questions and scenarios. And like, as educators, I think we can come up with every hypothetical possibility. So we had professional development coming up. And when I was talking with the trainer, I was like, let's get past the information. We have the information. We all know what is needed, but like, how are we going to get into that? So one of the initial steps is really leveraging that opportunity for our administrators or support staff to hear what the possibilities were and almost like seeing is believing. So seeing the final product of what a student profile could look like and how this could support us really helped to spark that curiosity and then the engagement and really the excitement as far as, wow, we have all these great practices and now we can put them into a platform. And this can really change the way we look at our students and get past just those talks.
Yeah.
So with that, that really like sparked like our engine to really get moving. And then I did consistent follow-ups. So from there, now everyone was curious and excited and we knew what we needed to do. But then, you know, we get stuck in these tornadoes of to-do lists and just the everyday. So making sure like I was in the buildings, following up with those teams and really empowering those teams that this is what we could do and leaning on those that really wanted to dive right in. You always have those that, you know, see the possibility and want to explore. And I think that really sparks that contagious energy to get things moving.
I love that because I think that something, what you're saying is letting those people drive the engine, the ones that are excited and that are curious and that are ready to go after it, rather than sort of focusing on everyone else you have to kind of bring along.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's with a lot of things. You know, if you wait until you have 100% of people on board, you could be waiting forever. And some people take a little bit longer and want that train and they want that solid foundation, whereas others can see the possibility and aren't really afraid to start. And with just one person starting, it spreads to like the whole team. And that's really how we've built since January, diving in and really taking off with making a lot of the processes we had on paper brought into the platform and then just brought into our student conversations and our daily reality.
Well, and I think even you said that the idea of seeing is believing, right? It was once you start to see it in reality, like you kind of believe in it. And we talk about that all the time on the podcast and just I think in education of just that idea of when you see the success, you're more likely to believe in it and it'll motivate you even further. So I am curious, you know, because MTSS in general, for a lot of us, once most people understand it, it makes sense, right? That idea of providing more support to some students and then providing more intensive supports to others. What challenges have you faced in turning some of that, those ideas into daily routines for staff and students?
So even though we are a very small district, also sometimes operate almost as like individual islands. So, you know, you gather together, you talk, you have leader meetings, and we all have the same resources. But the way I would use a resource at a primary school would be vastly different than they would use at the high school. So when we started talking about our MTSS practices, it became very apparent that the way the resources we were being used were very fragmented and different by building, which then made us think, well, if our students then are transitioning from building to building, this may leave gaps. So we really wanted to focus, okay, how are we going to bridge those gaps and how are we going to form that consistency? So we didn't only want to identify, you know, the information we were putting into Branch in Minds, how we were doing it, but we also wanted to talk about those interventions. So if a student set a goal, well, what was our first step of intervention and how were we really changing to use those resources we have district-wide rather than relying maybe on our teaching strategies or teacher-based material? Because then you bring in all these other factors that can kind of deter that consistency.
Well, and I think that that's kind of leads me into that next question of how have you seen the impact of that consistency? What has that looked like now that you've become more consistent? Because I do think it's so important, right? You talk about the fragmented ways of doing things. I mean, that's such an important part of system support and system level work. So how have you seen the impact of being more consistent across your different schools? You've seen the impact of that consistency across your schools?
So the way that we've seen a lot of the impact being is now when we're having these conversations, especially about our English language learners, that when students are coming into us, whether it's a new entrant or we want to monitor progress on student growth, every conversation focuses on the same intervention strategies or the same monitoring practices. Like I said, I've been in the district for about a decade and we've had certain resources And I think we're only starting to learn the power of using those specific resources and what that would mean for tracking our student progress. So now when we're having these conversations about students, everyone knows what we're going to use. Okay, so we're going to assess the student using this progress monitoring tool, and then we're going to track them for this long of a time, and then we're going to revisit. So I think just having that concrete understanding of what the process is and how we are going to move forward in a process takes a lot of guesswork out, and again, forms that consistency. And it's not just in one building, but it's another. And those clear pathways, I think, are really how we build our strong MTSS frameworks.
Well, and I think you're right in the fact of having one way to do it. It also clears up confusion and clears up uncertainty about, does this score actually tell us the same thing? You know, like, and if a student would move to another school building, I don't know about how your district is structured, but the idea of like, there's four elementaries and one middle school. When they get to middle school, you don't have four different types of progress monitoring tools that have been used to look at when you look at historical data. So having that consistency is so important for just, I would think, an overall student journey and supporting them over time as well.
Yeah. And it becomes more so, you know, like comparing apples to apples, where, you know, when you look at the platform, we are constantly seeing if a child is growing or if they're starting to struggle, or did we see a point in their educational career where they showed growth, but then maybe something happened. But we're constantly comparing against the same assessment. And it's something, if it remains consistent, like you said, it kind of takes the guesswork out of, well, what was administered at that point? And maybe, you know, maybe that child performed better on paper than the computer-based assessment. But if we're constantly given the same thing, we can really get a true picture of the student.
Yeah, yeah. So with the idea of consistency, how, in your experience, does establishing these kind of concrete norms and routines through this MTSS process help increase staff buy-in? Has that helped people believe in it even more?
100%. I mean, when we started, a lot of the initial work was done with our administrators and our support team. And then when it came to this point of, we're having team meetings, we want to start tracking everything in Branch and Minds, and we want our teachers to start dabbling with it, by having these clear norms as far as, this is the assessment we're going to use to see current point, this is the assessment we're going to readminister to see progress, it took all of that guesswork out for the teachers. They knew the expectation. And by providing almost like an intervention menu, it really allowed them just to dive into action. So it kind of took a lot of that time that could be spent, you know, in that analysis paralysis of talking and, well, what if this and what if that? It more so led to just, we have a framework, we're going to go by this. But then also allowing the teachers to know, you know, we're open to feedback. If we're diving in and we're just going to get messy and we're going to see how things work, it's only going to be as effective as you share with us, because you're in the rooms, you're doing the interventions, you are the boots on the ground. And having those open communications, I think, have really taken us to the next step. And I'm really interested to see how we're going to sum up the school year and how that impact is going to move into next year when we have a full year with our admin, our support staff, but then our teachers really diving in.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about feedback. How have you asked that? What kind of feedback have you gotten and maybe pivoted from that feedback?
So kind of like what I said in the beginning, we always like leaned on those that like found this so interesting and were very excited to dive in. And when going in, we were looking at these menus of interventions. Again, there's so many different ways that we can support a student, which can also be very overwhelming. So a lot of the feedback came to, you know, if we're going into Branch of Minds and we want to kind of target certain skills, why don't we just narrow? Why don't we keep it small, concise? Because again, if we limit, it almost helps us, because then you're not overwhelmed with so many different options. The same way we limited the amount of assessments we're given, we narrowed it down, because again, you could give endless ways to assess a student. But by almost taking the feedback as to, well, what assessments provide you the most information for student progress, What do you find most beneficial when you're trying to intervene based on whether it's reading or math? And really narrowing down to just those specific resources, I think has been very helpful because it took a lot of the overwhelming factors out of play.
So did you feel like you got that feedback from teachers in the beginning when they like sort of looked at the intervention library and going, there's a lot here. What do we use?
Yes. And that was our initial step. So first we started with the library and then even just the way we tracked interventions, you know, our teachers are doing a lot of this during their preps where they're also prepping for, you know, their classes and grading and reaching out to parents. So we want to be so respectful of their time and really ensure that anything we're doing is also efficient for them. And a lot of the feedback also came to, well, the way that we're tracking if interventions are done and modifying whether they're scheduled or if they required comments or feedback. We've also expanded to create paper documents so that, you know, even if you wanted someone in the room to just take notes throughout, and then we put the information in later on. And a lot of this came from within the classrooms. And again, we're happy to make those revisions because at the end of the day, our educators are the ones that are implementing this each and every day. And they're the ones that are working with the students to help provide these interventions to hopefully make success.
Yeah. Well, I am curious, why do you think that acting on this stuff sooner, why do you think sort of this push to get in the work and get messy, like you said, why do you think that that matters? And how are you kind of continuing to maintain that quality without getting stuck into those conversations of analysis paralysis? How do you keep that going? Like, why does it matter? And how do you keep going?
I think taking the first step for anything is always the hardest. And I think jumping into something, especially when something new, as educators, we've gone through so many initiatives that we're sort of like, am I going to dive right into this? Should I wait to see how this plays out? How long is this going to be around? So I think by kind of saying we're going in head first, it took a lot of that time away because our students are in urgent need of support. We have our meetings, and at some times these meetings are coming at a point where we're being so reactive rather than proactive. And the longer we wait, it's not going to get any better. So waiting another year is only delaying the supports that our students need. So I almost feel like I'd rather go through the messiness of questions and meetings as we go in because we're getting that real life feedback. It's no longer hypothetical. We are seeing what's happening. We're getting immediate answers. We're rectifying that and we're adjusting our processes and procedures. So it's not like we're going to talk, test something out, then come back, then talk, then test something out. We're kind of doing that in sync with each other. And I think that's helping us really just kickstart the whole process, get the fear out of the way, and start making immediate progress with our children.
Yeah. Can you think of a student or even a group of students that you feel like that this has made a difference for?
100%. We initially started this year. I do oversee our E&L department, and we started this year with our E&L data meetings, using our NYSIS LAT data to really see, okay, so what students went down a level on the NYSIS LAT? Where are these students falling in our small groups? And I had the teachers start with those students, monitoring them, okay, those students are in our small groups. We're going to review the NYSIS LAT. What areas do we need to focus on? How are we going to support the students in that area? And we started tracking. And it was amazing to see that, you know, once we started tracking, seeing how many of those intervention sessions, maybe a student was missing. So were they really getting intervention? Or again, was the intervention that we've always used over these years, is it really effective to meet in their needs? So I think it just brought, we're always collecting data, but it brings the data really to the forefront and it shows it constantly. And I think that was eye-opening and allowed us to adjust sooner. So rather than waiting, you know, 6 weeks to re-meet on a group of students or until the next data meeting, we were able to adjust much sooner, which I think goes back to we're going to be more proactive than react.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and just that idea of you can intervene sooner for these students that something's not making a difference for. And even just what you said, just that urgent need to support them that we can't wait any longer. I just think that this is such an interesting approach, because there's a lot of times I talk to customers that they're like, we've spent this year talking and meeting and training and all this stuff before we implement. And so I do think that this is just a different way to look at things. What works for one district is different for others. So, and some may see this as kind of a hot take of like, I could never do this in my district. That's just, those for people who want to get messy. It's going to get messy for them, right? And so in your eyes, where has this helped your school or team the most? Like, where do you feel like that this has really helped them the most? And then like, where have you found places where discussion or reflection may need more time?
So I think it really helped just our overall team understanding that there's so much we can do and there's so much that we are already doing, but we can always improve. And you don't necessarily need formal training. Professional development will be provided, but just with the opportunity of knowing that they're supported. And I really went off the lens of, you can't mess this up. By waiting, that's really the only thing you can do, because then you're, again, students are just being stagnant. So there's really no way of messing it up, and anything you do will be beneficial. So by doing that, going in, I said, okay, so you track something. If we need to delete it, you delete it. And then we re-put in a plan. I can't even tell you how many action plans we have revised, because again, we saw that the way it was input, we wanted to change goals. But at the end of the day, we're now at a point where we're almost at the end of the school year, and teachers that had no formal training have a solid understanding of what's expected. They're the ones now that are saying, I'm changing up my groups. I want to put this student in. And now I have something to move forward with. So now I have pretty much like two teachers in every single building that now when we're doing this formal training, they're going to be the ones that are going to further spearhead it. So I feel like while the lift is very heavy this year, it's very much on the administration and the support staff, it's setting us up that next year we have those individuals who are going to be the ones that are going to be supporting our teachers as they move forward and being the ones that are excited and are that catalyst for further movement.
That's the secret, right? You want those champions at each school to feel like to be able to move the work forward. And even I think having now you have examples moving into next year of going, here's where it worked. Here's what you have something to move forward with. I would love for you to share a little bit about just even that idea for your district. Like, you know, you talked about just like some of your demographics at the beginning and how it matters for your English language students. How do you feel like it's helped refine your MTSS practice, even just like this taking action, not even just thinking about the platform, but how do you feel like it's helped refine the MTSS part of this?
I think it really helped us to see, you know, the way that our tiers are structured based on our students. I think it is very unique having a very diverse population and a very large ELL population that it almost brings to attention that at times we're doing these interventions, but could it really be a tier one instructional component that we need to address? And I think that's something that was really highlighted. You know, how are our students falling into tiers, especially when it's certain classes or cohorts? And what really should be our focus? Should it be on that tier one instruction and really strengthening that so that, you know, if students are moved to tier two, it really is warranted, because I think we do have a lot of students that are receiving interventions that could almost be considered a tier one intervention. So I think that was one really big highlight that we got from this and something that really pushed us to really look now at our frameworks and dive more into that work, especially moving into next year.
Yeah. And right, like you can't kind of tier two your way out of a tier one problem. There's a lot of stuff that can be done at tier one, and even just highlighting of like, what are the learning supports and the differentiation that can happen at tier one, I think is important to look at. But Kristen, I think that this is such an important topic to talk about, just that idea of like, let's get in the work and let's get messy and get things done. Cause I do think, right, like we talked about, we spend a lot of time in education admiring the problem, talking about things. And so I applaud you in sort of pushing forward, because I know that there's probably naysayers. There's probably resistance. You're not doing this work without any kind of resistance or people challenging you or wanting to drag you back. So I applaud the hard work that you're doing. So thank you so much for this conversation. You know, I do agree that for some districts, it may not be the right thing to do, but hopefully this maybe will prompt some people to kind of think about their approach into implementation. Even just the belief that some teachers, if they're curious, they're capable of more than what we think that they are. So
definitely. Yeah. And I think, like you said, having those champions, we have such expertise in our classrooms and in our schools. And sometimes, again, we get so caught up in the day to day and we don't necessarily highlight or lean on that enough, especially because our teachers are so busy. But I think in every building, someone can think of, you know, someone who would be on board and be willing to try. And I think that's where a lot of the magic can happen.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here, Kristen. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.